Turn to the early chapters of Psalms. The early chapters of Psalms. I want to do something in this hour that's probably impossible for me to do it thoroughly, but I will do it hurriedly because I think what I'm about to give you will be helpful. Last year for our Sword Men's Conference that we do in November, I put together basically what I'm about to give you. And, it helped me to put it together. The men responded well, and I don't think I've done this anywhere else since then. I might have, I don't remember now, but I don't think I have. But I've kind of reinvented it just a little bit for you guys. In Psalm number 1, if you've been a Christian very long, you know that psalm. It lays out a picture, a little bit of a biographical sketch about a godly man and an ungodly man. And I like the opening part where it says, blessed is the man. Talking about the godly man. It means if you walk with the Lord like you should, there'll be blessing that comes with that. Now, I'm going to hopscotch just a little bit here. Verse number 4 in that chapter, number 1 says, the ungodly are not so. So there's a difference. A real difference between the godly man and the ungodly man. If you look at chapter 2 and verse 1 and 2, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? Even the kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. They not only strike, these wicked, ungodly rulers, they not only strike against God, they strike against the people who walk with God. Look at chapter 3 and verse 1. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. So if we live for the Lord, walk with him, we're going to find there will be some of this other crowd who will do things hurtful, do things that will in some way do us damage. Verse 6 of that third chapter says, but I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Now, you say, well, man, some of this stuff you got reason to be concerned about. Well, we do, but the question is, are we going to cave and be intimidated, or are we going to rise up as the Lord would have us to? And he said, I'm not going to be afraid. You look in chapter 4 and verse 3, he says, but know that the Lord hath set apart him that is godly for himself. The Lord's got something in mind. If you're going to walk with him, the Lord's got something in mind. He has set us apart for himself. The Lord will hear when I call unto him. So he's got something in mind for us. And if we talk to him, he will listen. And then down into chapter 5, and I'll read just a little bit here, starting in verse 7, and I want you to look at the beginning of verse 7 where it says, but as for me, key phrase. You'll find that phrase 2 or 3 other times in the Bible, but this one right here says, but as for me, I will come into thy house in the multitude of thy mercy, and in thy fear will I worship toward thy holy temple. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of mine enemies. Make thy way straight before my face. Drop down verse 11 says, but let all those that put their trust in thee rejoice. Let them ever shout for joy because thou defendest them. Let them also that love thy name be joyful in thee. For thou, Lord, wilt bless the righteous. With favor wilt thou compass him as with a shield. Now, I hopscotch through those chapters to just get a little picture here. We are who we are. The world is who it is, etc. But I like verse 7 where he says, all of this being true, as for me, here is where I am, here's where I head. And he said, I'm going to come into the house, into thy house, the house of the Lord, and I'm going to come in to get the abundance of your mercy. I'm going to worship the Lord. I'm going to let you lead me in the right path. Now, I've got 5 lists I want to give you. 5 lists of things that I think will help you to be that kind of a Christian. And, well, All of that may be true, but as for me, let me tell you about what I think. The first list, the seven most important people in your life. The seven most important people in your life. And they are, number one, your parents. Number two, your spouse. Number three, your offspring. Children, grandchildren. And as of just 3 weeks ago, Betty and I have a little great-granddaughter now. We can't believe it. But we are. Number four, important people in your life, the most important people in your life, number four is your pastor. Number five, your teachers. Number six, your counselors. And number seven, your partners. And when I say partners, I'm talking about your business partners, your soul-winning partners, etc. The people that you link up with, and in some shape or form, you are doing some activity or some business with that person. Now, let me back up. In my case, my parents are gone already. My dad's been gone about 11 years. Mom's been gone about five. So as of now, they're out of the picture in my life. Would be the same with some of you. So you say, well, what do you do if one of the people that you mentioned that are important people in your life, if one of them, for whatever reason, let's say maybe you say, well, I only had one child and that child has gone off. I would not want to take too much. I would not want to let them influence me very much. If somebody like that or a teacher has gone off the rails, then you let some blending, you let some overlapping take place here. It'd be great if all seven of these people that I mentioned were positive factors in your life. But if there is a negative factor there, then you can kind of push that to one side and lean more heavily on some of the others. But if you get everything working like it ought to work, I mean, I could stand here half a day telling you stories about my dad and mom and how they positively impacted my life. Some of you know the lady that I've been married to a long time. And again, I could tell you lots of Betty stories. Things that have positively impacted my life, I mean, to this hour. Some of you know our children. Marlon and Davina, they're grown. They have families of their own. But my, how we have been blessed with them and their spouses. The six grandchildren now that are primarily grown, we've been blessed. I've had more than one guy that I counted as my pastor, starting when I was a teenager, and I leaned heavily on advice and counsel and influence that I got then and continue to even now. Pastors around me that are a blessing to me and a help to me, teachers, counselors, partners, all of that. It's important for us, Proverbs chapter 13 tells us, to walk with those who walk with the Lord. We will gain things. We will be wise if we walk with those who've already gone ahead a little bit, and they've learned some things that'd be good if we learned them from them and didn't have to go through the school of hard knocks. You know the school colors, black and blue. Now, I've graduated a few places, but I just soon not graduate from there. Now, those are the seven most important people in your life. Let me give you another list. The seven greatest struggles of your life. You say struggles? Yeah. We're all going to have them. And here are the great struggles. And every single one of them, we can be winners here. We don't have to lose these struggles. But here they are. Number one struggle, starting when you are when you're learning to walk, authority. That's that is a problem nationwide across our land. Second struggle that we all have is truth. Finding the truth, laying hold on the truth. Bible says, buy the truth and sell it not. Number three is self. Talking about your struggles. Self. You know the three people we like to honor most? Me, myself, and I. And we have to work at getting control, letting the truth dictate to ourself, and letting the authorities that ought to have authority in our life feed us truth that will enable us to work with self. I mean, all this ties together. Number four struggle is the flesh. Our human flesh. It will go down trails. It ought not to go if you just let it go. If it doesn't have proper authority, if it has not signed on to the truth. If the flesh allows self to dictate to it, then the flesh just, I mean, it'll go crazy. And I don't have to go into detail about that. You understand that. Number five, struggles that you have, your peers. You say, yeah, those teenagers really got to watch it. Yeah, and some of the rest of us that are missing a few hair on top of our head going to have to watch it too. You never get past having peer pressure. It's always there. It's always going to be a struggle. Now, again, you don't have to lose the battle. You get some of these things settled and lean on some of these important people in your life, the peer thing will be fine. Number six in the struggle list is the culture. I dare say that a lot of us have only in recent times awakened to the culture issue. I mean, after all, we've always lived in freedom. We've always lived in America. We've always had a lot of things. But now then it's being threatened hugely. I mean, wholesale, retail. It's being threatened from a lot of different angles. The culture has risen to express itself. I'm talking about the satanic, wicked, ungodly culture while I was pastor in Maryland, the police chief in one of our neighboring towns came to our church and got saved, and I baptized him, and he kept wanting me to come and ride in the patrol car with him some night, and I kept putting him off, but finally, one Friday night, I went over and the town where he was police chief was only maybe 8 or 9 or 10,000. And I don't know, 9:30 or 10 o'clock, we got in the car. Now, I mean, this is a town. It was only 8 miles from us. And I had made hundreds of calls in that town. I mean, knocking on doors, door to door, soul winning calls, follow-up calls. I've been over there many, many times. But I got a picture of that town that night that I hadn't had before. Now, I'm just telling you, Evansville's no different. Murfreesboro's no different. And the culture is a factor with all of us. Now, struggle number seven, and I'm using the word devotion here or faithfulness. That's a struggle. You say, well, my parents taught me what's right. My spouse encourages me to do what's right, and I know for my children's sake I ought to do what's right, and my pastor preaches to me what's right, and my teachers have taught me right, and every time I seek counsel from somebody, they head me right, and the people I work with, they want me to. So what's going on here? All of these struggles, I mean, the authority and self and the flesh and peers and culture come rushing at us, and what's our battle? Our battle is be faithful, do what we know to do. So we got all these struggles. List number three. The seven most important investments that you'll make in your life. The seven most important, most vital investments that you'll make in your life. I'm going to review my list here right quick. Money is there, but I'll get to that. The number one most important investment you'll make in your life is the Bible you read. Now, if you've got one of the so-called new versions, get rid of it. It's been tinkered with, it's been tampered with, and you just don't want to mess with it. I was telling somebody the other day, when I was working on my master's degree, part of the program was Hebrew and Greek. And at that point in my life, I hadn't been told about a lot of the issues related to this. Well, I decided, because I'd grown up with the King James text, I thought, well, I'm getting where I can work through the Hebrew Bible and later where I can work through the Greek Bible. And so I said, I'm just going to keep checking it out. And you know what? They assigned us passages to work out of the Hebrew text, and you couldn't just say, well, I think this is what it means, write it down. You had to put down all the details of the grammar of every single word, every detail. And here's what I discovered. And I'm not a scholar in either language, by the way. I do have working skills, but I've never claimed to be a scholar. I think anybody who claims to be a scholar in either one of those languages is maybe misstating his credentials. But here's what I discovered. The King James translators got it right. Just page after page after page, they got it right. So I can't recommend any of these others. Start with, a lot of them used distorted text. The Westcott Hort text that most of them are made out of. They Westcott and Hort, two Englishmen, they changed the New Testament Greek text 9,970 places. That lacks 30 being 10,000 places that they changed the text before any English translation was made from it. So how can you get a good text from a distorted text? All right, the Bible you read is vital. Second most important investment in your life is the church where you go. I don't care how good a job you get offered someplace, you or how much money they're going to pay you. For your sake and for the sake of your family, don't ditch your church for something else. All right? The church where you go, second most vital investment of your life. Number three is the spouse you choose. Now, some of you have already made that choice. Some of you are wanting to. Some of you are about to. Now, I'm just telling you, the spouse you choose is a vital investment, and you are investing your life in that person. Number four is the money you spend. What are you doing with what you make? And most of us need to give attention to honoring the Lord with our money, not only in what we give to Him, but in how we use what we have left over. There's some things. There are companies in Evansville that if they had to depend on me to get some of my money, they'd go broke promptly. And in fact, every once in a while, I do a little thing like that. I go, aha, some of these big corporations, you know. And anytime some national movement gets kicking on one of them, I'm not going to mess with it if it's just me. No matter on some of the boycotts. But if we get something going where there's a lot of people saying, hey, you know, they decide, for example, it's okay for guys who think they're gals to go into the gals' restrooms, we'll shop someplace else. Or we'll do without. Amen. It's not going there. Now, the way we spend our money, how we handle our money, how we handle our resources, it is telling. And the investment we make, how we use that. And by the way, those of you that are young, If the Lord gives you years, you're going to get old someday. And if you spend every nickel you got now, you may wish that you'd have figured out some. I mean, if you're starting at 20 or 30 years of age, you don't have to save a lot of money to wind up with something when you get to be 75. You'd be surprised if you handle it right. What you'll be able to do when you get to the point where you're not able to work anymore. Big vital issue is how you handle your money. Number five, the school you attend. Most important vital investments of your life, the school that you attend, where you send your children. And by the way, if you're paying any attention at all, the United States Department of Education this past week sent what they're calling the Dear Educator letter. And it went to every school district in America. The present administration announced that they're going to enforce all of the gender issues using whatever it is, Title X or something, using the money to put the pressure on so that guys can compete in girls' sports. Guys who say, oh yeah, I think I'm something else other than what I actually are. And so you have to comply with that if you're an educator, or there's going to be repercussions. And not only that, it'll involve the using of the restrooms as well. That letter went out from Washington, D.C. this past week. They called it the Dear Educator letter. Now, I'm just telling you folks, the school you attend is a vital investment. Drive a junk car if you have to. Ride a bicycle if you have to. But take care of your kids. Number six, the things you embrace, a vital investment. The things you embrace. Talking about philosophy, talking about principles, talking about just the values that you sign on to. And number seven, the career you pick, a vital investment. I'm glad that some of you wanted to be carpenters. Otherwise, I probably would be living in a pup tent because I'm not much of a builder. I'm glad some of you want to be policemen. Amen. You say, what are you saying? I'm telling you, I'm a back the blue guy. And just in the last few days, I've bumped in some business places. Some guys that were eating some of the same places we were, guys in uniform. I didn't even know them. I just said, hey, guys, God bless you, and thank you for wearing the blue. Now, that just tells them not everybody is trying to crucify them. These are vital investments. I'm watching the clock. Number four, fourth list, the worst enemies of your life. I want you to know who the bad guys are. And here they are. I'll do this one quickly. The world. Talking about the world system. And again, the culture fits in here. You can just put parenthesis culture. Number two, and I mentioned this already in another list, but your flesh. Your flesh. Treat it like an enemy when it starts talking in a direction that it ought not to be going. Number three, the devil. The devil's a real being. Number four, the compromisers. The compromisers, folks. You know, it's like, don't get too terribly serious about, you know, the Bible, etc. I have made it a personal project to see that all of the clergy in our county, Rutherford County, and I have a list of about 140 of them. I'm talking about Catholics, Lutherans, Episcopalians, all of them. But I've made it a personal project to see that they all get our newspaper. This last week, I got the second communication from a guy one of those guys. And this one was a lengthy epistle that he had written explaining why their denomination is so inclusive. I mean, it's enough to make you sick. You say, what is he? He's compromised everything that we hold dear. And you say, are you going to go to lunch with him? Not even if he's buying. Nope, not going to do it. You say, well, you know, I mean, you might work out somebody if you met with a guy. You know, some of those guys are such nice guys. If you got to hanging around with them like that, you might get to liking them too much. And you're not going to help them because they've already been brainwashed. Some of them, you could already read Romans chapter 1 and just say reprobate. A lot of them have already, I'm talking about clergy. They have already become alcoholics, many of them. Many of them are living in other sin. And we just don't need to go there. Number five, worst enemies. Number five, hypocrites. One of my family told me this week they'd been talking to their neighbors, and the neighbors said, well, we just quit church. We had some hypocrites in the church where we're going. And I was so proud of my family member who said, well, you know, there are hypocrites. We've all seen some of them. But he said, I decided that I just wasn't going to let the hypocrites determine what my life would be. Now, that kind of posture helps you. But you're going to run into these, and they're not your friend. Tempters. Number six, tempters. Those who try to tempt you to go where you ought not to go, do what you ought not to do. And number seven, liars. And this would include false teachers. They're just liars. They're not giving you the truth. All right. I got another list. One more list. I'm watching the clock, Pastor. I am. One more list here. This one, seven issues you need to understand. You say, where are we headed with all of this? Right where we started. As for me, I'm going to try to work with the things here that I need to work with, and I'm going to try to avoid some things. And you say, why? Because I want to get my act together. I want my life to count. I want to have influence for the Lord. And Father's Day just passed. I have two grandsons. One's 19, the other one's 16. The two of them went together and bought me a Father's Day card. And they didn't just sign it, but they wrote me, both of them wrote a note on the Father's Day card. And I don't know whether one read the other one and decided or not, but both of them used the word influence and thanked me for the influence that I have had and am having on them as they grow up. Folks, I'm telling you, I just about have a shouting spell to realize that I'm having some influence even on that second generation that's coming after me. The issues here, last little list, the issues that all of us really need to understand, I mean, to get our act together. Number one, we need to understand some things about God. Need to give him place. Don't set him aside. Second thing is we need to understand sin. That's S-I-N. You don't have to have a dictionary to figure that out. Years ago, a famous psychiatrist named Carl Menninger wrote a book entitled, Whatever Became of Sin? He wasn't a saved man. I think it was back in the 70s. Wrote a book entitled, Whatever Became of Sin? What would he think now? If you and I understand sin, it's dirt, it's damage, what it will do if we don't get it settled. Number three that we need to understand is time. Time. One second at a time becomes minutes, minutes become hours, hours become days, days become weeks, weeks become months, months become years, years become decades, and before you know it, you're going to have gray hair. Time invested well will serve you well. But it's going to run out. Number four, issues we need to understand is eternity. When time finishes up, eternity will begin. You know, when I left home yesterday, headed up 24 to the Pennyrail and across here to the Ohio River and into Evansville, I know that's the best way to come. There have been other times when I've driven here that I've gone first to Paducah, the area there where I grew up. I have a brother who still lives there, and Betty has family there. And any number of times when I've been coming here from Murfreesboro, I've gone around and gone all the way up 24, just skip the Pennyrail, go up all the way 24 to Paducah, stay a few hours, visit some of the family, and then come to Evansville. There's more than one way to get here. But in fact, when I left home yesterday, I could have just said, Evansville, I don't want to go there. I much prefer to go to Louisville. I could have said, I think I'll go to Cincinnati. Or to Chicago. No, not Chicago. You know, we've got lots of choices here. But when it comes to eternity, you only got two. And you got to decide here. If you're going to go to heaven, you've got to decide. If you just say, I'm going to ignore that, pay no attention, then you're going to wind up in the other place, in hell. You don't have to do anything. Just keep going the direction you're going, you'll go there. But there is an eternity coming after time is finished. Item number five that you need to understand is salvation. That doesn't come by communion, baptism, being good to your mother-in-law, balancing your checkbook, you know, all kinds of other good things. You're not going to go to heaven based on any of that. Going to heaven, salvation, is not something you can buy, not something you can work out yourself. God's already got the plan, and it's through His Son, the Lord Jesus. When He died on the cross and arose from the grave, He paid the debt that all of us owed, and He just wants us to trust Him. Make a definite decision that I'm signing up with Him. And we need to understand salvation. Number six, there's another word in the Bible, holy or holiness. We need to understand that too. You say, what's that about? It's just about living a good, clean life. God says do something, we do it. If He says don't, we don't. And number seven, the word responsibility, I think, needs to plug in here. Just be responsible. When I became editor of the Sword of the Lord, a little over 26 years ago now, I had some pretty heavy responsibilities fall on my shoulders. Brother Russ, when you became pastor here, some responsibilities fell on your shoulders. And any one of us, you know, Betty and I got married, new responsibilities. When our kids were born, new responsibilities. And you say, man, responsibilities, that heavy stuff. Yeah, I know it's heavy stuff, but if you and I pay attention to the list that I've given you here and get on the right side of things and push out the wrong things, responsibility will become so much a part of you. You won't have to get up on Monday and say, I'm going to be responsible today. It's the first day of the work week, and I'm going to be. You won't have to do that. If you just say, like David said, as for me, I'm going to come into the house of the Lord. I'm going to get a hold of the multitude of His mercy, and I am with great fear and reverence going to worship the Lord. I'm going to give myself to Him. I'm telling you, responsibility, it'll come out. It'll work fine. We had a poet in our country named Robert Frost. I won't give you the whole piece, just a little piece of it. He said, two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And he said, sorry, I couldn't travel both of them and just be one traveler. So long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. And then I took the other. And then down deeper in it, he said, I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And I think Mr. Frost said it well.